Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
And 580 KIDO with Dave Petzo here. And I believe you're the individual behind the United Airlines bump. You wanted to go to Louisville. Is that the...
Priority. That is a priority.
Right. Well, I mean, you have the fancy expedited passes with TSA and also...
They're very fancy.
I figured that was you.
Yeah.
When you take a look at one incident impacting a business... What do you make of what happened with United? By the way, you're an international traveler, so you have quite a lot of experience with these airlines,
And often not good. Yeah. It's a very difficult thing, and I do get why they have to overbook. There's no question that helps all of us from a pricing perspective. If they can't overbook, tickets are going to cost more.
So first you like GMOs, and now you like overbooking.
But the way they handled it, Kevin, this is off the charts. This is not exactly the best way to, especially in a video world, right, a social media world, to end up having that circumstance. I noticed the guy didn't wipe the blood off his face, but boy, what a picture that is for a company. And you're quite right, just didn't handle it right. And now we may get more regulations. We'll see. But I'm sure all the companies are addressing their. Whatever their policies are, because this is something else, really. You think that somebody's hauled off with four United employees that were trying to be shifted,
right?
Four hours away.
Right, they had to get to Louisville.
Right. So instead, they throw a guy off a plane instead of them getting in a car and driving. That's bizarre.
Well, I guess they couldn't make it. But on the other hand, you take a look at the impact it's had on United. Now you have people saying they're never going to fly United again. United's CEO at first came out and said the people did everything right. Then he's recanted. Now you have this high-priced attorney. And lo and behold, the doctor that lost his medical license because he was shopping pills to pay for gay sex, just got his license back.
Oh.
All of a sudden, now he's going to be the spokesperson for all of us that are on the planes.
It is a interesting twist in life, isn't it?
It is. It shows that you can come back from just about anything.
That's right. He was about to become a millionaire,
right? And but you take a look at this and you think, how does, if you were running United Airlines, how would you handle it?
Well, I think in the case that came out right off the bat. Now, understand this though, that United, this was a perfect storm against United. It obviously was, but you still had a circumstance where the CEO who has been really working hard on labor relations. They've had a lot of issues at United. And so he's been in there trying to fix that. And so he's been very supportive of all the efforts of the employees. And the first thing he does is his gut reaction is supporting the employees. Not always a bad decision, but in this case it just made it look really bad because now they have to recant because the truth of the matter is this was not handled well at all.
Dave Petzo with us here at 580 KIDO. What about Delta? Now I was saying that, they'll give you 10 grand, as if anybody is going to get 10 grand from Delta to get bumped from a flight.
No, what is it, 200? They just started $200 or whatever and worked their way from there. Yeah, at least it certainly would have been cheaper for United, obviously, to have paid some passenger on board a couple $1,000 to get off, and somebody would have said yes.
But you know how it is. You're a capitalist. You don't want to spend any more than you have to.
No.
With the peons.
Well, you would rather not spend anything. Just say you go ahead and get off, but you got off for something or nobody's getting off, and you don't throw people off the airplane.
Right. Well, they threw $800 at the guy.
Yeah.
And they said, no, that wasn't good enough. Now, $800 for some of us, that's pretty darn good.
They should have offered it to everybody then.
Apparently. Yeah. So, Dave Petzo, we continue on. So how does United recover?
They will, because guess what? People are going to say, no, it's cheaper to fly this airline or that airline, or it's a better schedule, and I've got to go to Denver, so I'm off and going. I'm guessing that nothing changed here at Boise Airport. The people canceled their tickets and said, I'm not going to fly you because of what you did. I'll bet they kept their tickets. And that's why they're going to recover, Kevin. It doesn't, you know, I spent 48 hours in O'Hare, thanks to United, a few years ago. And, you know, it was a mess. It was unbelievable. Unbelievably difficult to deal with them, and it doesn't matter. They just bounce back, and because it's hard to run an airline.
I know you're a big fan of government regulation. Service has really gone downhill, I would argue, since deregulation. I'm sure you agree with that. I'm sure you want more government.
I want more government in it. Yes, that's exactly right, because I want to make sure we spend $3,000 every round-trip ticket we get. For a coach. Now, you know, it's a
what does that have to do with the government regulating?
Kevin, if they regulated when we were in regulation, regulated the routes, that's exactly what it was. It was incredibly expensive.
Right, but on the other hand,
you
had more airlines.
Right, because you could you have more airlines.
You had more competition.
You did not have more competition.
Well, you did.
No, we had regulated competition. They
right,
had to fly everywhere and
right, but we had more airlines.
We did because they, Kevin. The price was ridiculous. When I was a kid, it cost $600 to go one coast to the other.
Well, that's cheap compared to today.
No, it's not. That's the point. That's 40 years ago.
Right.
And we're talking. I mean, this is and that was back in the old regulation days. Now, when you deregulate, you had all these airlines pop up, lots of competition.
Well, but they've all consolidated though.
And they are consolidating.
Right.
Now. You're right. No,
US Air, American Airlines.
And there'll be new ones that pop up, just like they always
have. They're all colluding against us.
They are. They do when they can. You betcha. You betcha. Absolutely. But, you know, it's just like the old days when people talked about old Ma Bell, you know, how terrible it was they deregulated the phones.
And then they reconfigured and came back with another monopoly.
Yeah.
You remember Pacific Bell, Mountain Bell, Ohio Bell,
I do.
Penn Bell.
And you have multiple
Southern
choices
Bell.
Now. Landline? No. I don't have a landline. Do you?
No.
There you go.
I don't know where we're going here. Let's talk about taxes.
Technology evolved everything.
But you don't have any rights on airlines. Are you good with that?
No, I'm not good with having no rights.
Well, but let's bring back the government to help us.
I think we should have some rights, and I think we're going to probably relook at some of these rules. There's no doubt about it in my mind that this is going to cause an outcry for that.
Dave Pezzo with us here, host of Money Matters, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. At 580 KIDO, so tax time, what does it all mean? What does it mean that we have to fork over money to keep the government running? I proudly do it. In fact, I know a lot of people, they say, you know, Kevin Miller, I'm happy to pay taxes. I'm really happy to pay taxes. I think it's great.
You do?
Yeah, patriotism.
You think you're... Yeah.
It's all
and
about
you
patriotism.
Think it's a, you think it's
you know,
a,
as
it's
a matter
a
of fact,
amount that you pay.
I say, take more. Take more.
Well, and you can't.
Yeah.
It's okay. Go ahead and send a check.
It's right.
Always been the Warren Buffett argument, right?
Right.
It's like, I don't pay enough in taxes. Well, send some more money in.
What? Well, you know, I do that every year, and they give some back to me. They say, thank you, Kevin. You've done enough. So we take a look at taxes. Are we getting the return on investment when we're talking about the federal government?
Kevin, have we ever?
Well,
I mean, the biggest problem we have in this country, in my opinion, has been for years, that we are overregulated and overtaxed. The federal government is an enormous sucking sound of it pulls all productivity, all everything away. I mean, we have to have certain amounts of government or we have complete chaos. But the reality is government is just this huge and growing pig. And only in government, when they do something poorly or a program doesn't work, the answer is we need to put more money into it. And they never have an answer like, why don't we relook at this program and change it? If we don't like the way Medicare or Medicaid or the welfare system works, the problem really isn't that the system is broken. We need more money for it. And it just grows and grows and grows. And the amount of regulations, thank goodness, in November, that stopped. But the amount of regulations that have been put on businesses and individuals in this country over the past, really, I don't even want to say 8 years, Kevin, because it went on in the Bush administration, too, is for over 10 years has been horrifying. And now we're seeing a little bit of that coming back. But it's a big problem. Growing government is a huge, huge problem. and slows everything down. You're basically just simply saying this, Kevin. I'm going to take money from the most productive parts of the private sector, and I'm going to take it, and then we're going to throw it away because we're going to throw it into this low productivity, low gain area. And basically, since I'm in charge, I'm going to go ahead and give that money to my constituents, and so they vote for me.
Well, one person who is not on the happy list with a lot of folks is Governor Otter. And, you know, people are still mad about the grocery tax and still upset that he vetoed the repeal of the grocery tax, considering now, thanks to the state of Idaho, our Amazon orders will be taxed and we'll have to pay Idaho state sales tax when we order Amazon stuff. So a lot of people are still upset with Governor Otter.
Yeah,
I don't want to put words in your mouth on this one, but yeah. I believe we've covered this issue before.
Well, we have. And again, I'm not sure that the grocery tax is a big deal. Frankly, I don't think it is. And unless we can come up with a solution for how you are going to come up with that revenue, I don't know what, you know. And Kevin, it just doesn't make any sense to me. We're talking about, if we're talking about really poor people, we're talking about people that don't.
They have food stamps
and they're not taxed anyway.
I have people from every economic place. Rich people, poor people saying that tax has to go.
Yeah.
And it's the right thing to do. And yet you have Governor Otter.
And what would they replace it with, Kevin?
Well, there's more than enough money in there right now. The surplus is rolling. How about the Amazon sales tax? And here's the other thing. When we talk about government, here's an interesting fact. Now, as I've said, I've advocated for you along with others to run for governor. Remember a couple years ago, the late night shenanigans where they gave us the 10-cent increase in fuel tax?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So that was supposed to fix the roads. Well, now there's a new report that the roads are really bad. So part of the new transportation deal, $300 million, 1% of the sales tax is going to go to fixing the roads. Well, the roads still aren't fixed.
Right.
So you wonder where all this money is going. And then people say, well, we're putting money in, but we're still far behind. Well, is that an efficient use of government?
Kevin, government isn't efficient. Mm. It never is. It never, ever is. And we wish it would be, but it can't be. And until we get some private, you know, public partnerships in there where at least you have the private sector has an incentive to operate efficiently, then you can't possibly, you can't build roads with any efficiency. You can't fix potholes. I mean, it's absurd how difficult it is to get government to work compared to what business can do. And so, no, it's not productive at all. It's a complete waste. And as soon as we can get more private and public partnerships together, I think we're going to see this go a lot
better. But you wonder where the money's going.
Does it disappear? It probably does in graft. Yeah.
You know, to talk about my good friend, one politician, waste, fraud, and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we need to do to make it efficient. But I go back to this that, you know, we're talking about how much it's going to cost. Well, even when we allocate resources, those things still don't get done.
They don't because you look at how difficult it is to get some of these projects done. For example, we did $800 billion stimulus package as soon as Obama took office.
Shovel ready.
And what would they say? $550 billion is all that was ever dug in a hole. All the rest of it just went to pay off teachers and unions that had voted for him. I mean, that's government. It doesn't actually fix potholes.
I'm with you, but I still think there are a lot of people that are very upset, and I think that many people think that this is going away, but I don't think the repeal of the grocery tax is going away.
I agree. I think it'll keep coming up. It's something that people feel very passionate about. They do.
And it hits everybody. It's
amazing.
It
does hit everybody. Absolutely it does. Except for the very poor that don't pay any that have food stamps.
Well, I think that's taken out of there as well.
No, they don't pay tax on food stamps.
You sure?
There's no sales tax.
I don't know about that. I've seen people up there
coughing up the sales tax?
When they're driving in their caddies, too. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
More on that in a minute. You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
All right, Dave Petzo is with us here at 580 KIDO, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial. So when we talk of some of the big financial stories of the week, what should we be looking for?
Well, the French election's coming up this coming week. But more importantly to me, although they have that all, the, you know, this is a big news item across the globe, it appears that not much is going to happen there. And as most big upcoming events are forecast, they don't have the same impact. So what I'm looking at really is what's going to affect our markets. Two things. We said China growing faster than expected. That's huge. That's potentially very, very big. And
is that good news or bad news?
It depends, Kevin. That's a really fair question. From an economic perspective, it is very good news. From a stock market perspective, it's very good news. A country the size of China, an economy of over a billion people, growing faster than expected, they're a huge force in the world. So that's big. But the reality is do we want a stronger or weaker China from a geopolitical perspective? Kevin, that's up for debate. I don't know that you want them too weak and maybe, you know, causing all kinds of problems. But at the same time, a strong China is a force that we don't necessarily want to reckon with either. So it's a fair question as to what we really want.
Dave Petzo with us here, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's talk about a few things. Tesla now being more valuable than GM.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Well, for people that aren't aware of it, that don't follow the financial news as much as you do, how can that happen that Tesla has eclipsed General Motors when it comes to value?
Kevin, it's really all about growth, and this is the hard part for people. It's not everybody puts things on a certain valuation perspective, whether you're a value person or a growth person. And if you're a value person, which I tend to be, which means I look for companies that sell for a lot less than I think that they're worth, sectors that sell for less than I think they could be worth, but they're beaten up for whatever reason now. Growth people, on the other hand, buy into vision, if you will. And they have different metrics for deciding what that is. And it's the rate of growth. How many cars are they selling? Not what their profits are. Not how many cars overall. But the growth rate of what they're doing is why their price goes up. And let's face it, it is a cult stock. There's no question about it that people are
I mean, isn't this like Bitcoin funny money, in my opinion?
No.
I mean, okay, I can go to a GM dealer.
Yeah.
I can go to a GM dealer anywhere in the Treasure Valley. I can't go to a Tesla dealer.
You cannot. Nope. It is not the same. You're looking at it from the size of General Motors, and the growth people that buy the stock are buying the fact that Tesla is making tens of thousands and selling tens of thousands of cars more. Their growth rate is why they're buying the stock.
All right, let's
I'm not saying you should, Kevin. I don't own the stock, and I think it's a joke, okay,
right,
for price-wise. I think that but you have to understand why they do it and why it's being bid up. It's not insanity.
Dave Petzo with us here at Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. All right, war with North Korea, how would the markets handle that?
Kevin, that's an interesting thing. I talked about this on Saturday. This is a difficult one to call. Nobody likes, or we always say, Wall Street doesn't like uncertainty. Well, we didn't like Donald Trump becoming president. Oh, yeah, we did. Sorry. What I mean is that these things are always, it's always this predictor that it's going to be a disaster with North Korea. If we get rid of places like North Korea and Iran, which are, you know, just horrible spots in the world that eventually are going to be massive problems, I don't see that as bad. Markets are always focused on just what's happening this second. And getting rid of evil people in the world is just not a bad thing, even if it's temporarily disruptive to your nap or whatever it is you're doing. It's one of those things that is just, to me, makes no sense that we are so short-sighted to say that a problem with North Korea is going to be a massive stock market problem. Things like that can be disruptive. But as we look at really big problems like World War II and things like that, they really weren't that disruptive to the stock market at all. In fact, the market throughout World War II actually rose.
Sure, but we didn't have Twitter, Facebook, and everything else. And the losses and what were, you know, North Korea is not going to be very easy. It's got, the fourth largest military in the world, submarines and everything else. It's got to have an impact, especially when we're talking about the president, even before talking about going to to battle with North Korea, that the military needs to be rejuvenated, refreshed, and restored.
It does, and I'm not saying that we should go out launching wars with everybody, but if push comes to shove, I do not see this as a massive market sell-off. Certainly it's disruptive, but it is, to me, is a problem that is always out there, and when we solve problems that are there, it is not negative, maybe temporarily, but it certainly isn't negative in the long run.
And finally, Dave Petzo, Mission Impossible, buying a house in the Treasure Valley. Amazing. People are having tough times buying homes because the job market, the employment rate, homes are being sold at record rates. We've seen this all before.
We've seen some of this before. It's interesting. In my neighborhood, there's a couple houses that are overpriced, and they're not selling. And so I think if people are
not everybody can live in your neighborhood. Not everybody can,
understand.
You know, the gated communities, the walls, the gargoyles, the moats and such.
Right. Right,
right.
Right. Yeah.
Designed to keep folks like me out. But yes,
absolutely,
go ahead. Yes,
absolutely.
Right, right.
Yes, yeah. There's a poster with your face.
Exactly.
On it.
Do not let this man near this facility. So, but really, yep. A lot of folks, whether it's single family homes, entry level homes,
mm-hmm.
tough to buy right now.
They are. They clearly are, Kevin. There's no question that we have a big demand out there, and some of the local home builders. Hats off to them. They picked up a lot of land on the cheap and are going to continue to meet that demand. But right now, I think it's positive, Kevin, in the sense that they're not overbuilding, and it's not like they're building homes and waiting for people to come. But there are a few spec homes out there. I do know of a couple of situations recently that homes have been on the market for months and months. And so they're not all being picked up. But in the starter category, the lower priced, they absolutely are, because it is so cheap to buy relative to renting. It's a great it's a really great environment for new people starting a household formation. It's a wonderful environment for that.
Dave Petzo, we'll catch you this Saturday. Are you going to be in town, or are you going to be broadcasting from another undisclosed location?
I'm going to be here.
You're going to
be here holding down the fort.
You're going to be here broadcasting from United Airlines, probably.
That's, yeah, me and my buddies at United.
Dave Petzo, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
There are no secrets to success. You have a dream. Work hard, fight fear, and never give up. You'll fail probably more than once. But after that, it's those that persevere that have success. Right Stuff Radio is the voice of small business. It's a show that serves as the town square of business, a place to learn from others through the stories we tell and the advice we share. Ready to learn how to own your own business and not let it own you? Tune in to the Right Stuff Radio show every Saturday at noon on 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and good morning, and thank you for joining us. Hey, I'm only going to be live for the next 30 minutes because I had an opportunity yesterday to interview Adam Shore, who is the director of Global Equity Strategies for Janus Group, Janus Capital, which manages, I don't know, 60, 100 billion. It's a huge number. And it was a very interesting one. And with the French elections coming up over the weekend, kind of a big deal to be talking about that. So I thought, no, you all would rather hear about what's going on globally than hear from me for another hour. So I'm going to plug it in, even though we're here live. Typically we'll do that when I'm out of town or something. But it was so timely, I wanted to make sure we got that out. So if you have any questions or comments, let's do it right now. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I wanted to talk a little bit myself today about the fact that this market just won't go down. It just won't. It's like, so yesterday I had the opportunity to play golf with my dad, and poor golf, but we played. And it was typical. I was asked, what do you think the market's doing, you know, with all the turmoil, with all the stuff going on, with everything out there? And the answer is the same. It's always the same.
what's going on out there is not abnormal. It feels like it because we've not resolved the today's problems. But when we simply roll the clock back 6 months or 1 year or 2 years or whatever, you run into the same thing. We're worried about something. We're always fussed about something. So we wind up in a circumstance where the answer always, of course, is I don't know. But the reality is, as you dig deeper and you think about this, there is a lot going on. A lot of geopolitical events, right? Where we're concerned about North Korea. It's kind of a big deal. You got a complete nut job with nuclear weapons. That's never good. Nut job plus nuclear weapons equals not good, right? So, total nut job in North Korea. But the Chinese seem to be working with us there. We dropped bombs on a Soviet air base in Syria. We have French elections. We've got all these things going on all over the globe. We've got the press that thinks that Donald Trump is the incarnation of Satan. And so we have absolutely no positive reporting there. And the market hangs. So even when we get maybe a negative economic report and people are concerned about a slowdown and we've had 15% gain since Donald Trump was elected president, it doesn't fall far. It pulls back just a little bit because there's so much buying out there. There's so many people that want to come in. So you take this and you think about this in multiple ways. But if you want to just simply say, all right, just stop, pull back from all the litany of things you can just list. Just open up the newspaper today. There's going to be five things of why the world is ending today. Okay? There are. We all know just simple things like flooding. I'm sure that we all know that downtown will be washed away if we have 90-degree days for, you know, a week in a row. It's always bad news. Always. But when it comes to the markets, it's like it's going to end. And so I was reminding this person, I said, you know what's funny is during your whole life, my kid's life, the market's done 10% a year. Uh-huh, but it's always, but what? But it's different this time. That's what really it boils down to. It's different this time. It's not different. It's just not resolved. All the problems we've had in the past, we resolved. We can't have the emotional tie to those problems because they're resolved. We can put lots of emotion on unresolved problems because they can scare us. But we'll fix it. We'll figure it out. We always do. So we fuss and fume and we wonder if we ought to get in. Should we get out? Should we zig? Should we zag? What should we be doing in the market when it's done 10% your whole life and nothing else has come even close? Here's what you should do. You should buy and put it away and have it grow 10% a year the rest of your life. That's what we should do. But we don't. We play this magic game of trying to figure out what the market's doing. And we're wrong enough to make sure that you don't get anywhere near 10%. That's the crazy part. The more we play, the worse we do. The more we guess, the lower our returns. Stop guessing. It's not a casino. You are the casino. The odds are in your favor if you just leave it alone. Excuse me, but we won't. We won't. So let's just take a step back. Pardon me. Take one step back and simply say this. Are we headed in the right direction? Yes or no? Is less regulation already happening, not just a campaign promise, already happening? Is that good? For business. Oh, yeah. You could raise taxes but lower regulation and you'd have a net gain. That's how important it is. I know it's harder to understand than a simple tax cut. But when you tell business they can't or it takes 10 years worth of legal work to try to pound it through to dig a hole somewhere, that is detrimental to the economy. That's detrimental to anybody getting up out of bed and dealing with the morons at City Hall. That's just terrible. You can't imagine how difficult it is to get anything done. Well, you get that out of the way. One of the reasons why would you have a Chobani plant in Idaho? Why do you have all these things going on down in Magic Valley? Why would anybody go there? This is like a windy desert, high desert place. Nobody wants to go there. well, they've got power or something. No. You know why? It's because when the governor says, we will make it so you can build this factory quickly, they mean it. And so they remove the red tape. Chobani can put up a plant in a year that putting it up in New York might take five and a lot more money. So that's why. It's saying we don't have to give away the farm on tax relief to people to locate factories here if we greenlight it and make it easy for them to build. Regulations are positive, heading in the right direction. What about tax policy? Do you think taxes are going to go up? I don't either. I don't know when they're coming down, but it certainly is not going up. And so now I know how to deal with whatever costs I'm going to have on the tax side. Maybe I will expand business. Do you think things are going to be done with Obamacare that if I have 40 employees, I now could actually open another restaurant, another whatever store I want, and hire more people and go over that magic 40 or 50 employees where death occurs to all businesses because you are now a big business and we hate you? That's being changed. That's positive. Super positive. I mean, the list goes on, but when we just stop and say, what is happening in the world instead of what's happening this second, what directionally are we doing? Is it positive or is it negative? Like or hate Donald Trump, his economic policy is very pro-business. Very pro-business. We are heading the right direction. And I know everybody says, oh, Congress this, Congress that. It's all tied up. Stop it. It takes time. People have to fight. People have to be heard. And that's the way it works. It worked when Ronald Reagan was president. It worked when Democrats have both chambers. It takes time. People have to be heard. Chill out. It will happen, but it's going to take time, and it's going to be messy. And remember, the left, which is the media completely has bought into, hates everything Donald Trump is doing. So anything that's done is going to be reported poorly. It's a disaster. It's going to be take forever. These things take a long time. It'll get done. The trajectory is good. Let's not forget overall common sense when we get caught up in the day-to-day. I wonder what the French elections are going to be like. I wonder what's going to happen when this program stalls out or that program stalls out. All of those things are just noise that have no real effect long-term on the economy of the United States of America, which has an effect long-term on the market. We got to take a quick break. Our number, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, shoot it fast, dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, and if you have any comments or questions, please shoot those over via email, whatever, and we're here during the week. And remember, in the second hour, we're going to be talking, I have done an interview yesterday with Adam Shore, and he is the Director of Global Strategies for Janus Capital, a huge money management firm, top 20 money management firm in the country, and obviously has a global picture. I really enjoyed it. I wanted to tell you, it was something that I thoroughly enjoyed. It was interesting. As I said, I had an opportunity yesterday afternoon to play in a little, you know, member guest deal with my dad. And, of course, he's in the industry, as most of you know, as well. And so we were talking about it because it was, how was the interview? How'd it go? It was good. It was fantastic is what it was. I think you're going to enjoy it very much. I'm going to enjoy listening to it in the second hour, and I really will, because it is something that I did enjoy very much, and I think you will as well. It was just a really interesting. We both finished it, and this doesn't happen all the time, trust me, where your guest turns around and goes, darn, that was really fun. You get to do this every week? And it was really fun. And so we had a nice discussion. I really enjoyed it. And great guy. So I think you're going to like it very much and learn quite a lot. At any rate, let's. If you guys have any questions, you better hustle them off at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. All right, so kind of an email question. This is one that kind of comes up all of the time, okay, and just did. And so this question came out, and it's really, okay, so, Dave, you always talk about the fact of having of putting your money away and leaving it alone. What exactly does that mean? I mean, do you never, ever change it? Do you ever, never, you know, ever change and sell something, move money around, things like that? And the answer is more complicated than yes or no. It's a very complicated question. When I say leave it alone, what I am generally referring to, and it's a very fair question, so thank you very much for people who, everybody, but recently, thank you for telling me that. And here's the point. When you're sitting there and you're thinking about whether you should be changing your investments because of what's going on in the news, the answer is, of course not. That's the point I'm making. And I think some of you get that. But it's fair to kind of dive into this, and when do you change your plans? And the answer is when your life changes or there's direction in your life that you need to be reassessing. You're getting close to a college education for your kids, so it's time to pull that money out. You're getting closer to retirement, so we need to be changing it perhaps more to an income-oriented portfolio. It's not a now it's zero and we're going to deliver that money, which is that's another story. We'll talk about that another time. But you do have changes that occur in life, and you're going to need money, and you want to be prepared for that. You don't want to try to get money when maybe the market's having a normal, certain to occur over and over again, all the days of our lives, market correction, okay? That's going to happen, and you don't want to have it down when you do that. So we want to prepare for it and begin moving money out of the market as we're going to need that money for whatever need it is. So as there's changes that occur, that's going to be the same. But as a general rule, if you were to buy high-quality investments and leave them the heck alone, then you're going to get closer to that 10% average that we talk about. The more you change, the worse you do. The more you change, the more – this is what I – to try to impress this point as deeply as I possibly can. Here's what I would say. Fidelity did a study, right? And in that study, they sliced and diced. You know, they've got thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of different investors. And they have the data because we get to know who our client is. We know if you're college educated. We know how much income approximately you make, what your age is, all those things. Because when you sign up for an account, we pretty much know all those things. We have to. It's called know your client. You have to know those things. And so you have all that information. So they run it through the computers. They slice and dice it. Are the millennials the best investors? Are the old people the best? And if you're a college professor, if you've got a master's degree, you must be better than the guy that only has a high school education. You know who the best one is? The people who forgot they have an account that left it alone did far better than anyone else. In other words, they're so dumb, they don't even remember they have an account. That's how dumb they are. And what really means is they left it the heck alone. They didn't outfox themselves. They weren't clever by half, as the Brits say. They were unaware. They even had an account. And so they did what? The hardest thing in investing, they sat on their hands and they did nothing. And they watched it grow more than all the other geniuses out there. All the super smart people. Oh, I know, that's not you. No, you watch your CNBC. You get down or you watch all the financial pornography you can. And that's going to help you, you think. Be smart. That's what people do. All day long, all weekend long, they overthink it. So look, the answer is not that you don't do anything. The correct answer isn't you don't put your head in the sand. The correct answer would be something between, I don't even know I have an investment over here. And I am so super smart. I've got all this debit. I've got all these charts and graphs, and I'm figuring it out all weekend long. It's somewhere between the two, where you have the intellectual capacity to see that maybe the management team isn't as good as they were, right? And it's time to fire them and go on to another one. But the idea that you're going to be trading around headlines in the market is beyond foolish. It just shows a complete lack of understanding of what the market is about. So the general rule, the overriding rule, what helps people most is leave it alone. Just leave it alone. And you'll do far, far better than the people that think they're smart, that are moving money around. oftentimes the most dangerous person in the room, in the coffee break room, is the person everybody thinks is on top of investing. And so they ask what they're doing. That can be very dangerous, extremely dangerous, because everybody knows lots of know-it-alls, right? And they really don't know what's going on. All right, listen, we're going to talk in the next hour. Whatever happens in the French elections, it happens, okay? Right, everybody wants, if you're an investor, we all want one of the two to be the middle person, meaning the moderate, okay? So we've got extreme left, extreme right, we got a moderate. We got to get the moderate in there, right? But if it doesn't happen, I know the sky is falling according to the media. You know what? It's not. It's France. It's not the end of the world. Good Lord, they haven't done anything in 100 years anyway. All right, everybody, enjoy the second hour. I think you're going to like Adam Shore. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I am out today, but I wanted to really take the time whenever you have an opportunity to visit with a global strategist. I like to take those opportunities. That's an opportunity for all of us to learn a little something and learn what the big thinkers are thinking out there. And it's my pleasure today to introduce to you and talk with Adam Shore, who is the global strategist with Janus Capital. Now, a global strategist means we're going to get a big picture look at the world here. We're not going to necessarily go into, yeah, we're really high on this little stock or that little stock and things like that, but a bigger picture. And, you know, that's kind of what this program's about. We like to talk about the big picture instead of getting into the little picture. So these are the kind of things that I like to talk about. Adam, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's good to have you. Let's start with we're going to roll around the world. We'll talk about the different regions and what you guys like in general. But you and I talked just a moment here before we started here. I want to kind of circle the, if you will, around this theme today of negativity, and it's something we talk a lot here on Money Matters, but. Why do you think, or do you think, that the people are negative? I know you're not particularly negative on the world, but we've seen everything from Europe Part 1 through 4 is going to be a disaster. Crete and all these little tiny countries you don't even know where they are on the map are going to take the whole world down. You're fairly bullish, but it seems like there's just this constant mantra. Why do you think that is?
You know, if you go back to the great global financial crisis, we were really worried about the destruction of our financial system. We were talking about a depression. And people survived that, of course, but I think it left a lot of lingering fears. And it's not just with investors, it's with corporations as well. And what you've seen in the last 7 to 8 years is an environment where people were afraid to take risk. Companies were not spending money on projects. They were rather spending money on dividends and buying back shares, which to me is fine as a shareholder, but it's not how you build value of a business long term. It's not you want to build factories and make products and so on. So we've been in this environment where people have been so fearful that any little bit of news is a here we go again kind of event. Now, I believe that environment is ending. I believe the Trump election kind of signaled the end of this low volatility defensive environment, and made us more aggressive and more opportunistic.
Now, why was that a defining moment for you?
So it started with Brexit, oddly, which was a high-risk situation, but you saw markets reacted very quickly, a couple of weeks, and they said, all right, well, this won't be as bad. Mm-hmm. But what the Trump election brought is a much more pro-business environment. And when you have a pro-business environment, it meant companies can start investing in projects. They saw less regulation, lower tax rates, the ability to bring back capital. And it also, I think, just begins to unleash those animal spirits. And the thing about it is once your competitor gets a little more aggressive, mm-hmm. you have to get more aggressive.
Right.
If you start making acquisitions, your competitor does, then you don't want to be left behind. So like any psychology, it kind of builds on itself. We also now, with the economy improving, we see the Fed pulling back in its involvement. It'll be slow, but it's important because, again, it gets you from a financial-driven economy to an economic, traditional economy, with again, driven by investment. So we're not there yet. It's a lot of things on the come, but we think it's a transition point that that's will persist for several years.
Now, you mentioned Brexit. It's an interesting beginning point where polling was wrong, intellectuals were dead wrong, and, if you will, flyover country in both Britain and here, and now we're looking at the French elections. What do you – go ahead and look in your crystal ball and tell us what you think is going to happen there.
Yeah, well, don't look at the polls, right, because we can't trust them. Look, I don't – my prediction, which is probably as valid as the polls, is that we have a mainstream candidate come out. But let's take the extreme candidate, which is Le Pen.
And wouldn't it be either like there's three candidates so that people understand basically, right? There's a middle and there's a far left and a far right. Is that fair to say?
That's correct, yeah.
And the concern is in a runoff it would be far left versus far right. Is that fair also?
That's correct.
Okay, so okay, go ahead.
And the far left is rising in the polls, although it still trails. And so, but that is it's the momentum in the big level of undecided voters, as we saw with every poll, and we understand the difficulty of conducting and understanding polls. But let's take the worst, well, I believe would be a worst case scenario for markets in perception at least, which is Le Pen wins. Le Pen it talks about wanting to leave the EU, wanting to leave the euro. It's very difficult. It's much easier to carry that out, and it's very difficult for a politician, I think, or for a country, I should say, to leave the euro. It's easy to talk about. It's hard to do, and it's a lot of pain. And politicians don't usually want to inflict pain. They want to solve problems. So I think if the view that even if Le Pen won, like we've seen maybe in our country, the difference between rhetoric and execution, between pre-election and post-election, we may have those same differences in France. So it may be noisy short term, but nothing that's going to change our fundamental view.
Buying opportunity, perhaps.
I believe so. Yeah, and I think we'll have we've been in this low volatility environment recently. It's going to pick up. And to us, these volatile moments, if we have them, will be generally buying opportunities. We don't see anything that's going to take away some of the positive sentiment, which will follow into positive action in equity markets today.
That's an interesting, I like that take. It certainly isn't what the media says all the time. Back to our original premise, which is it's all bad all the time. And that's what it feels like in these. So, but as you phrase it that way, let's think of it a little bit further, take it a step further. It's a little different than Britain, isn't it, in the sense that they don't have their own currency. They bought all into the EU.
Yes.
France did.
It's easier to leave the EU than it is to leave the euro. Because just think about how do you leave the euro.
Right.
If I'm a French depositor and they're saying, Adam, and you have euros in your bank account now, but soon they're going to be French francs and likely weaker currency, what am I going to do with my deposits? I'm going to send them to Germany. I'm going to own euro, German accounts or euro-based accounts wherever I go. Well, you can't have that, so you have to have capital controls. So capital controls leads to a contraction of the economy. And so you may argue there's a J curve that 2 or 3 years out from now, France is much better off with a weak franc. And Italy may be better off with a weaker lira and peseta in Spain and so on. But getting from here to there is going to be very painful. And as I said, it'd probably be better to be the politician that follows than the one who actually inflicts that pain. Okay. And so I just don't see that happening. We just don't see that happening.
It's an interesting take. I like that. Let's talk further about Europe, because that's an interesting starting place, if you will. Is it, as they say, just nothing more than a great outdoor museum with no creativity, innovation, or anything? It certainly appears that way. So when people talk about valuations relative to U.S. and all those other things that are just a real common, simple, easy thing to say, we should move money here or there, they've made that case for years. But Europe still continues to stagnate, and they have for a couple decades grown at a much slower pace than really anywhere else in the world. Are there changes? Is there a reason to believe that they'll do better going forward? Or, in fact, do we need to be accepting that this is not a fair relative valuation unless it's excessively low.
I think the Europe probably suffers from less than potential growth because it has, even though they're trying to reform them, it has very tough labor laws and very tough, and maybe tough from a corporate point of view, maybe not so tough if you're an employee there, right? Fair enough. But it has laws that probably keeps productivity a little bit low, keeps unemployment a little bit higher. And it hasn't had traditionally, there's always exceptions, but traditionally hasn't had that entrepreneurial environment that we have seen elsewhere in the world. Now, there's exceptions. There's some interesting tech companies in the Nordic regions and some healthcare companies. But by and large, it has been maybe not as dynamic of an economy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's uninvestable, but it does mean that you have to maybe apply a different growth metric to it, as you point out, and you can't necessarily compare valuations U.S. to Europe. Now, I would compare historical euro valuations to where European valuations to where we are now. Mm-hmm. I think you could make an argument there's some attractive opportunities there.
Okay.
But I agree, it's not going to be a growth market, or big growth market.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Let's move on a little bit then. So overall, you're overall optimistic, it sounds.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that basically overall optimistic around the world? Overall optimistic about U.S. equities? Are you have a particular like and dislike out there?
We're optimistic about equities. I think the probably most compelling case today, when you consider the risk return, would be in the U.S. We could argue, if you want to get really risky and aggressive, something like European financials, it could be cheap, but it could bring some heartache. And they have a lot of, not beyond the elections, there are a lot of issues with how they unwind the ECB balance sheet and so on. So to me, to get what I think will be rewarded, which is a sustainable, high-quality businesses that are using, finally, their competitive advantages to add value rather than just the financial engineering, if that's your focus, it ought to be here in the U.S. because there's a lot of those companies that are offering that. And I don't think valuations are excessive, nor do I think there has to be a time limit on bull markets. People say, well, the market's been up from 2009, and it's been 8 years now. How can that continue? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see a shot clock. It doesn't have to end. Because if you look at the recovery, because of this defensive environment we talked about, this cautious and kind of environment we've had, the recovery has been very flat. It hasn't been as steep, and so I think there's more legs to it than people give it credit for.
Interesting. That's good. It's interesting because that is a bit counter to what you hear every day. Back to the news flow. The news flow is the P/E ratios are too high. Schiller, 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 Schiller. That's all they talk about is the Schiller P/E ratio is at ridiculous highs, although nobody really acknowledges it's been ridiculously high for years and years.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know if stopwatch is correct, but it is once in a while. But maybe Schiller will be right every 24 years.
Look, I hear that about the Schiller P/E. The Schiller P/E to me, again, takes in the last 10 years.
Yep.
Well, to me, the last 10 years have not been normal. And if you look at the dip, if you look at the history of the Schiller PE, they've never had a year that we had losses in their numbers until 2009.
Right.
So 2009, there was a loss that went into their calculation that persists in their calculation. And so to me, that's just one example of how the last 10 years, really the last 7 years, are not how you want to base your outcome. Right. The other example, and so I don't see the Schiller PE when you take in the history, take in inflation and other factors as being an indicator. And I agree with you that it's if you'd listened to the Schiller PE, you would have lost a lot of money on the table in the last couple of years.
Right, right. Several years, actually. I think it's been high for a long time.
Absolutely, yeah. And people have been asking about it for a long time, and maybe it'll be right when, you know, as you say, if you predict the same thing over and over again, eventually you'll get it right.
But yeah, I, unfortunately, it doesn't really make you right because you said the market would go down since 9,000 points. It doesn't make you right from 21 down to 15.
I remember years ago talking to an analyst on the a young analyst on the sell side. I was on the buy side as a portfolio manager. And he was talking about making predictions, and he said, they tell me either to predict what or to predict when, but don't do both.
Yeah, right, exactly. The economist's avoidance there. You know, this is kind of a broad question, and as we leave this segment and take a break here, I'd like to maybe contemplate this as part of this overview as well. We're in such a quant world and computer driven and ETF trading and all of these things are trying to race at different paces, and we're going to have a flash crash here or there, derivatives, all these things that are just kind of get us all away from and get us into this measurement game of how we want to try to build formulas for investment success. Now, my whole life, your whole life, 30-year-old's whole life, my kids, whatever, my grandparents, the market's gone up 10%. We don't get caught, but that's not good enough. We need to know what we're going to do today for this moment. We seem focused very much on short term, number one. Number two, we don't seem to use much common sense in investing. Now, is that what, when we talk about strategists, do we sit back and look at the environment, or are we just measuring PE ratios and computer models of what's going to happen out there instead of saying things like, if you will, like you said, Donald Trump was elected. It's pro-growth, period. Things have changed. Regulations are going to go down, period. And all these other things that we try to throw in to the mix. Are we missing some of that? Maybe common sense is the wrong word, but some thought, just people step back and think about the ground conditions and what the world looks like as we build our models for investing.
I think so. I think when I look at models or people who are trying to do factor-based investing or quantitative-based investing, they'll look at the last 8 years or 10 years, and which obviously includes the last 8 years, and those to me have not been normal years. So you can always create a model and keep adjusting the dials so you fit the data, but you have to make sure the data is predictive of what's going to happen. But if you look at the last 7 years, the best stocks in an up market have been low volatility, low beta, you know, stocks that don't move as much with the market. Traditionally, those are great stocks in down markets.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're good stocks in up markets, that to me is taking risk and return and turning it around and not making the traditional trade-off. So if you think risk and return trade-off, which has lasted forever in all our everything, not just in investing, is going away, mm-hmm. then I guess to rely on the last 8 years. But I don't think that paradigm has changed. And because of that, I agree with you. If you spend too much time on factors and analysis that's based on recent history, you're missing where we're going to be over the next 20 years, which I think is not, which I think is a very positive environment and more about stock picking, less about ETFs, more about growth, but ultimately about finding the right companies.
Final thought on this segment. Are you concerned about, with all the quants and everything out there, derivatives, are you concerned, as some talk a lot about, another flash crash or only worse?
What I'm concerned about is the what happens when all this money that has spiraled into ETFs,
mm-hmm.
and I think sometimes has obscured price discovery, when that starts unwinding. And we have a return from ETF, from passive to active. I don't know how that plays out, but it always concerns me when people think that there's one solution that is just a no-brainer, and everyone is huddled around that one solution. And to me, passive and ETFs are that solution right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back over the years we've been in the investment community, whenever there's one solution, that's the wrong one.
Right.
I don't know how we get from there to from here to there, but that's what concerns me.
But the shift will occur.
I believe so,
concerned about the unwinding of that. More than a flash crash.
More than a flash crash, but, more than a flash crash.
Okay, good. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to keep going around the world here with Adam Shore, who is the global strategist for Janus Capital. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to a special edition of Money Matters. Of course, I'm Dave Petso, but I'm here with Adam Shore, who is with Janus Capital. He's their global strategist, and we're kind of talking philosophically about the news and the negativity. And now let's go ahead and shift to more, if you will, what kind of sectors do you all like? I mean, what do you like in the world? What's a great place to be investing going forward? And again, I know you're going to do this, but I want to place this correct for everybody, because we hear this every day, 24/7. On CNBC and other, you know, financial pornography stations. Okay, so they're going to cause a constant. What's happening this millisecond now? That's not your position. Your position is this is what's we're favorable long term, and so I want to make sure our audience understands that this is a long term perspective, and I think that's the only thing that really is helpful.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the thing about having a long term perspective is you have to know why you have it. I mean, it sounds simple, but if your whole investment philosophy is I'm going to buy stocks because they're going to go up, then obviously that thesis gets violated every other day, and then you know what to do. Mm-hmm. If your thesis is I want to find segments or sectors where there's tremendous opportunity, there's a lot of misunderstanding, there's long-term growth, and the valuations are attractive, mm-hmm. which to me right now describes healthcare and biotech in particular, then that's a thesis you can get behind. And if you get volatility, and we will, you go back to those 4 points. Are those things still in place? And those, especially for healthcare, are in place. We have this combination, this confluence of demographics and innovation. So more people are entering that stage over 65 where you spend three times as much on healthcare. At the same time, the diseases that you typically get when you're older are target areas, so cancer, Alzheimer's eventually, diabetes, cardiac disease. These are all areas where there's tremendous breakthroughs in terms of the treatment. And if you can be a drug company that treats diseases where we're spending billions of dollars to care for people who suffer from them, there's a decent share of money for you, so you'll get the pricing. So to me, if you believe in innovation, we do. You believe in demographics, which doesn't change. And you believe in the value of saving lives and extracting some financial value beyond the social benefit, you want to be invested in healthcare right now.
Right. People are worried about it because it's change. You know, back to what we were talking about before, right? It's just it doesn't mean that the new administration is going to be better or worse. It's just going to be different, and that makes people nervous. Yeah, but at the same time, when we think about what's going on with biotechnology and things like that, it's amazing.
It's stunning, you know, the ability to map. So if you go back 15 years or 20 years, it took billions of dollars and a prior 15 years to really map the first human genome.
Yeah.
Today, I could go to a clinic or a lab and get my genetic profile, a human genome, done in for a couple $1,000 and done in a day or 2 days. So what's that mean? What it means is if I'm a drug company developing drugs, and there's companies doing that, taking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these profiles, I can find not just a cure for cancer, but a cure for a type of cancer. It's not just, say, breast cancer. There's 15 types of genetic mutations that lead to that, and I can target that. So the efficacy of drug development increases. The effectiveness or the efficacy of the treatment once it's in the clinical stage improves, so you have more better treatments and better economic returns as well. And that's what we're trying to get involved with. By the way, it means that you have to do your work to find those companies that will be successful. So there are still going to be a lot of companies that fail. So getting back to our earlier discussion, Dave, about ETFs versus active,
right?
This is the best place, I think, to be active, because there's a lot of value you can have or generate by finding managers who do the scientific work, who do the research to understand which of those companies will be successful. But now the returns to that success are much higher, we think.
Right. Good. Any other areas? It's okay to say, yeah, what we really don't like, X. Is there anything you don't like out there?
There's one area where I think expectations and people are getting too excited too soon, and that is financials.
Interesting.
After Trump was elected, you saw financial stocks soar, crazy. And you saw money into ETFs, financial ETFs, off the charts. And it's moderated this year. And we think longer term, it's a better environment for banks to have a steeper yield curve and to have less regulation. Mm-hmm. But we don't see what's priced into the market today has been this, we're going to remove all regulation. Well, Dodd-Frank's not going away.
No.
You know, it's hard to unwind regulation. Now, maybe, or certainly get rid of it. Now, maybe it's easier. They'll make it a little easier so you don't have to create a report that nobody reads every week. You create a report every month, send it to a government agency that doesn't look at it.
Ignores it anyway. Yeah.
But they ignore it less often. Or maybe you don't have three bodies regulating you, you have one. So there'll be some cost savings there, but there's still going to be some controls on capital. And if you look at what people have assumed with pricing of banks, they think they were going to return maybe these high return days that we had in 08 or 07, or sorry, before 08, 07, 06. And we just don't think it comes back there. So they're interesting opportunities, but it's we think people, again, have bought the trend rather than really look deeply at how these companies are going to benefit from that trend. So that's one area we're more cautious on.
Okay. And so in short on the financials, because that's very counter to what generally people feel is, yes, there's been a big move, but it's also a big move back, and now we'll see some of the fruits of higher interest rates and less regulation, in other words, improving profits. But also to that point, dividends and stock buybacks, that could start happening more quickly, could it not?
With financial firms?
With financial firms.
Yeah, if they can release
return of capital, getting the government off their back so they could return capital, could be a big buyer in the market, could it not?
They could, and you could see more share buybacks, better dividends if they allow their capital to levels to come down, because a lot of these banks are overcapitalized,
right,
given the regulatory environment. I guess we just don't see a massive lowering of the required levels of capital that will allow that to be a dominant source of returns. The other thing is people are excited with financials about the steeper yield curve and the idea that they can get more, very simply, get more for loans without raising the deposit rates, which helps your net interest margin. And that's, there's some fairness to that. And they will get the first couple rates. But what we've seen increases, the banks will get to keep it before they start raising our deposits.
Right.
But what we've seen is that additional rates beyond that don't necessarily, the banks don't necessarily get to keep it. And consumers start benefiting from it and what they see in their savings account. Mm-hmm. And increasingly, there's more competition for deposits because when governments do their stress tests, not their capital ratios, but their stress tests of the panic situation, what they really want in banks is deposits, retail deposits, because those are the stickiest kinds of assets. So there's more, even more competition for deposits. So we're less excited maybe than the consensus that banks' profitability is going to increase dramatically as rates increase.
Excellent. All right, it's time for another break. When we come back, let's kind of tour around the world and talk about what's going on globally. We've already talked about Europe, but we haven't touched on Japan, which is the I don't know. We have to talk about Japan because everybody talks about Japan. For 20 years, we have to talk about Japan. So we're going to talk about it. We'll touch on it, but most importantly, the emerging markets, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to this special edition of Money Matters. Of course, I'm Dave Petzo, and I'm here with Adam Shore, who is the global strategist for Janus Capital. And again, Adam, thank you for taking the time to be
Dave,
here.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks again. All right. So let's go on a tour around the world, if you will. All right. We've got we've touched on Europe pretty good because, of course, that's right in the news now. French elections happening over this weekend and so on. So we've got that. But let's go over it. You can spend as much time as you want in Japan. We've talked about it for 20 years. It's not gone anywhere. But please tell us, is it going to work? Is it, or just stay away?
Japan has disappointed us for 20 years. It's the old joke. It's the country of the future and always will be. And I think we are in that environment where people had a lot of hope after Abe was elected. He talked about his three arrows, and he never really connected the last one, which was major structural reform to get the economy reinflated, to get consumer activity going. And so we're very cautious on Japan. We don't think the valuations are that attractive right now. We don't see the growth. There's a risk in Japan, and if we currency has become a safe haven currency, which hurts the economy. So if we have any kind of political uncertainty or geopolitical uncertainty, the yen strengthens, which hurts that export-oriented country. So it's hard to get excited about Japan. And then you lay on top of that, it's demographic challenges and the debt associated with that. And they've gone from a country of savers to soon a country, as you get older, you're saving less, and there won't be a way to support that debt. It's hard to get excited.
Yeah. It keeps being talked about, but it just nothing's happening so far.
Yes.
Okay. Well, not a disaster yet, but you're not too worried about Japan, are you?
No, I don't think it'll be a disaster. I think they need to, at some point, find a way to get out of this mountain of debt.
Mm-hmm.
When you had all of your high savings rate, you can finance your debt internally. It's not a big deal. But eventually, they're going to have to find a way to adjust as that goes away. And the best way to help save a debt problem is through growth and through inflation. And that means you need to just reinvigorate the economy, reinvigorate the consumer, weaken your yen, and so on. And they haven't been able to carry that out. And so it's a slow fuse, but it's something they have to – so it's not panicking us over the next 5, 6 years, 10 years, but it's something they should be focused on,
right.
And they are, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, we can't ignore China. It's obviously a giant country. But I also, in the same breath, and we can certainly separate it, I really want to talk about India, which people don't talk a lot about. It's another, small number of like a billion people. But it is the largest democracy in the world, largest middle class, and they have got Modi, the prime minister, made some major reforms and took a hit last year pulling currency out. Do you see them becoming a global growth engine down the road?
It's probably our favorite emerging market right now because it is a growth engine right now. It's maybe the only country in the world where you're going to see, or a major country where you'll see interest rates continue to come down. They did that demonetization, which is hard to fathom. They took all this currency out of circulation and replaced it, and they're going to be beyond that. And so we'll see that the effects of that come in. And it's going to be slowly the unwinding of bureaucracy. Now, bureaucracy always unwinds slowly, as we know, around the world. And in India, it's 3 to 4 times more slowly than elsewhere. But we think there's a tremendous potential to grow that economy. And one day, a tremendous potential for U.S. companies to be exposed there. And then the greater access and greater infrastructure, all the things that make an economy grow. So India, to us, is as exciting as China. And to your point, probably less well appreciated and less well understood.
Good. Interesting. Well, and of course, China is moving along. So, and they came out recently with better than expected growth, which was interesting. Is that changing the global opinion that China was heading off into the abyss, or is it a one time number?
No, I don't think it's one time. The key with China is how they transition from this industrial export oriented economy to a more consumer and a more value-added economy. You can't be a low-cost producer, and China no longer is in many areas a low-cost producer. But that's not – being cheap labor is not a long-term economic strategy because there's always other countries that will beat you at it eventually. So China is moving to a more consumer-oriented environment. We're seeing that. Our concerns with China has to do with all the financial system. You see a lot of growth in credit, and the return on that growth is dwindling. But we think they can execute this pirouette pretty effectively, slowly. And so we don't think China is as fearful as – or we don't think China is going to be a problem. It's interesting. If you go back a year ago, the big concerns in the market, early 16, was when China reported a poor GDP number. And we didn't think it was that poor. It showed exactly what we thought was happening. The consumer strong, services strong, industrials flat. But the market was obsessed with China. So what we think is, as China goes along, whether it's 6% growth, 5% growth, what's more important is the market does not seem to be obsessed with China. They're viewing their transition as successful, and that's going to be good for global growth.
Gotcha. Now, and great for commodity prices. It should help keep commodity prices down.
Keep them down.
Keep them lower if their growth rate isn't, you know, if they're not just building empty cities anymore. It's more consumer-oriented society.
And if they're cutting out excess capacity. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you looked at things like iron ore, 60 or 70% of the incremental growth was going to China. They were the dominant buyer of all these great commodities. So you're right. If they're more rational mm-hmm. with their infrastructure and their not only their spending but even like their steel production and cutting out weak areas or inefficient areas, that will keep commodity prices at bay, which has impacts for emerging markets. I mean, they've had a nice run and maybe makes us a little less excited about some of the smaller emerging markets as China slows its financial system a little bit. But it's probably good for global inflation and good for global growth and competitiveness.
Good. Well, we have to take a quick break, and I want to go south too, because we got to talk about our neighbor to the south and whether that's going to if they can ever figure out how to grow more rapidly, being right next to the richest country in the world. And as well, you just touched on it with commodities. Is Brazil going to get their act together? I know they're doing well. We'll talk some more. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. And I'm here with Adam Score. Sorry about mm-hmm. that. I all of a sudden I went and focused on the H in the middle of that name. And anyway, he's the global strategist for Janus Capital. And a pleasure to have you here, Adam. So thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, we have kind of gone around the world, but I want to go south a little bit. And then I want to talk about a couple global concerns as well to wrap up today. So is there any chance for Mexico? I mean, it's obviously blessed with an amazing coastline, great weather, and so bad and the richest neighbor in the world, and so much corruption, drugs, everything, that they can't seem to ever get their act together. Do you have hope for them?
You know, it's going to come down to our trade policy. I mean, Mexico could have a important role as a supplier to the U.S. They lost, because of some of the issues you talked about, they lost that, and we saw a lot of insourcing in many companies, you know, even some of the auto companies moved from Mexico back to the U.S. And this isn't because of Trump. They were doing this.
They were doing it before.
They were doing it before. Yeah. And that could continue. So it's not an area we've found a lot of great investment opportunities in. But it's not a country I want to write off because of all the advantages you talked about. Mm-hmm. It could be a key partner in terms of trade and terms of economic development with the U.S. But there'll be a lot of political issues between then and now, or between now and then, standing in the way of that.
Right, right. Well, let's go further south, Brazil. Now, if, for example, China doesn't need as much import of natural resources, that obviously affects an export country like Brazil negatively. Corruption, with a capital C or exponential, however you want to say it, is what you would describe Brazil as. And certainly they're trying to unwind that. But their market is on fire. So is this a country you feel confident with, again, with all their natural resources, even if commodity prices come down?
No, it's hard to get excited about a country, in our view, that rallies because after the president gets impeached, or rallies because the corruption is not as bad as they thought. So we see a lot of trading opportunities in and out of Brazil, which is not our game. Years ago when I used to invest in Brazil, it was all macro. And then Brazil evolved, matured, and it was about let's find this great company, let's find that great company, because things had settled down, the economy had settled down. I feel like we've regressed, and now it's more of a macro trade and a sentiment trade. And that's hard to make a sustainable long-term argument for. The economy is still struggling. The political situation is still uncertain. There's a debt situation both the companies have to deal with and the government has to deal with. So for us, it's hard to make a real sustainable Brazilian a bunch of Brazilian investments.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, let's not totally leave emerging markets because we've got Europe, okay? And nobody ever talks about what's going on over there in East, you know, Poland, Czechoslovakia, and things like that. They only talk about Russia because of the size of, and perhaps the danger of Russia. Mm-hmm. But we hear good things over there. Is that been your experience, that is the future growth area of Europe?
I think you could argue it's a future growth area, as in the same way that, you know, Mexico benefited from the U.S. outsourcing of production. We have seen for years, and that should continue, companies moving into Eastern Europe for production. There always will be a little bit of the shadow of Russia and that influence there. But I think less maybe as an directly investable into those countries, and more as a find companies in developed Europe that are selling into those areas, mm-hmm. or using those countries to lower their cost structure. We think that's a decent opportunity.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now, this is more, if you will, let's call this our education segment. We usually have one of those, so we're going to call it this. But I want some education as well, and that is this. Why, when we've talked for years about emerging markets aren't doing well in large part, because the U.S. dollar is so strong? Well, the U.S. dollar has gotten stronger since Trump was elected, and other than a couple of weeks in there where emerging markets took a hit, they've been the strongest place in the world to be. And so we have a strong dollar. We've got emerging markets globally doing very, very well. Why? Were people wrong that the strong dollar doesn't hurt emerging markets?
I think there's a couple factors. One is the commodity cycle we talked about has helped emerging markets a little bit, and that, although that may abate somewhat. I think if you go back historically, you looked at emerging markets, one of the risks was they had a lot of debt in U.S. dollars, mm-hmm. and then they had their revenues in local currency, and they had to pay U.S. dollar interest rates and U.S. dollar coupons. And so if you had a strengthening dollar and a weakening, therefore a weakening local currency, you were getting squeezed. And you go back years to the tequila crisis in Mexico, that was a big factor, and the Asian crisis, and 3 years later, that was a big factor. What I see now is that companies and countries as well, but even companies, are a lot smarter about how they're sourcing their debt. And they don't necessarily have that dollar exposure, and so they're less tied or less at risk financially to a stronger dollar. So you could see some mitigation, I guess, of that, or weakening that link. I guess the other aspect has been often a strong dollar reflects some kind of global panic in the safe haven. And when there's a global panic, emerging markets suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by definition, you can't predict crises, you can't predict panics. But I do believe the next 8 years we'll have a lot less panic, we'll have a lot less itchy trigger fingers, or whatever term you want to use. We're a lot calmer mm-hmm. than we were the last 8 years. So again, that's another argument why you could break that relationship between the dollar and emerging markets.
Now, we've only got about a minute left, a little less than that. But one of the overriding concerns has always been when the Fed leaves, right? When they stop being the biggest buyer in the bond mm-hmm. market, and that wasn't the disaster. Now they're actually going to begin reducing their balance sheet. The ECB has not, but that's coming too. Do you think this is going to be a big cause of concern? Is it for you all and your strategies going forward?
In the U.S., not so much, because the Fed has been so tied to economic growth and so